Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Every weekday, we talk with public officials, business and education leaders, nonprofit organizations, and more about the issues of the day as we work hard to help you stay connected with local news and information. Now, here's Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon, thanks for being here. And yeah, this is going to be a little bit different program for you today. I heard this story about a week and a half ago on the American Family Farmer broadcast with Doug Steffen Saturday morning about a quite intriguing, tragic story, but yet moving forward and moving on to make a new life. And the new book is out soon, and it is called Flowers Bloom Anyway from Dr. Liz Fiedler-Mergen, and she joins us from St. Joseph, Minnesota. Thanks for being on this afternoon.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Well, I was struck by your story because you really, you had lost your husband and then you found out you were pregnant the next day. Talk about how that all transpired.
Yeah, so I was 31 years old. I was working full-time as a nurse practitioner. He was working in agriculture lending. And, you know, we were that couple that kind of did everything right, I'll say it. You know, I chose to go to grad school over a five-year period instead of a three-year period because I didn't want to take out loans. And we were just that couple that was really careful and planning, and things were supposed to take off for us right around that time. And we had bought his family farm. We had bought the original 40 acres that had been in the family since 1888. Our daughter had just turned three, and the next day, you know, he had a physical exam actually, and it was completely normal, and he didn't get any shots or anything like that. And his testing was normal. He was very healthy, and it was just a normal, you know, so he was healthy. And then that Wednesday, December 9th, 2020, he was running on the treadmill and died of a heart attack. And then that was a Wednesday. And then actually the Monday was the funeral. And then the next day after the funeral was when I found out I was pregnant with our second child.
So you got hit with two of life's biggest adjustments in a very short period of time. How did you get through those first few weeks?
Honestly, those first few weeks, you know, everyone says, oh, it's a blur, but I can remember it very vividly. I can remember taking things day by day, and we were hoping to get pregnant. We were doing fertility treatments, and so I knew there was a very strong chance when he died that I could be pregnant. But I think deep down, I knew that it was going to be hard either way, and of course, that's what I wanted. I wanted another child, and I wanted another part of him, but also aware that no one signs up typically to be a single parent. Not many people do anyway, but knowing that, hey, this wasn't how it was supposed to be. I wasn't going to be solo parenting. And it was definitely a very bittersweet complication. But I think, you know, when you say the first couple weeks, it took me a few months to really accept that I was going to be pregnant or that I was going to have this baby. I was just very cautious. I was not even 4 weeks when I took the pregnancy test. And so then it was just a very cautious, let's just not get too excited. Let's wait until we know what's going to happen here.
And you had your work, you had the farm, you had a child, all of that to deal with as well.
Yes. Yep. So we had started, I was working full-time as a nurse practitioner in family practice, and then we had started a little farm stand at the end of our driveway. You see flower farms popping up everywhere for many reasons, but one of them is you can grow a quite profitable crop on a small amount of land. And so that's why specialty crops are becoming more popular, and you can also, they're value added, so it's not, you know, a commodity like corn or soybeans. You can charge a premium for them if you include, you know, pairing them with an experience. And so that was something that we had started the summer before he passed away, but it was never meant to be replacing our income or replacing our careers. It was just kind of something fun that we did. And we thought, well, we'll see what happens in a few years when when things open up, because we live in Minnesota and that was one of the most strict states when it came to COVID lockdown. So there wasn't a lot to do that summer. And so we had started that farm stand, and, you know, really the story of my flower farm is it's something that I felt, if I'm being honest, I felt a little bit trapped here on this farm after he passed away, because I felt like I could never move. I felt like I would have to stay here because this is where he wanted to raise the girls. But I didn't set out to turn this into a business that was going to support our family, but I knew that it was something that was bringing me joy, so I kept doing it. I kept growing the flowers. And to be fully transparent, my customers were amazing. That first year, I said I was going to throw in the towel, and they wouldn't let me. They rallied behind, and we had 300 orders placed for Easter flowers within 24 hours, and I had to shut it off online. And those same customers that paid full price came out and bought flowers every week, and they picked my flowers for me, and they pulled weeds, and they helped plant, and they volunteered because I was very pregnant. And it was just kind of this community project that was brought together by, you know, a couple dozen people that really just wanted to help me succeed. And I think it grew into something we never expected. And year after year, the sales just continued to double and triple and quadruple, and just turned it into the things that people kept asking for. And now, as of 2026, we have a flower shop and a event venue that we built on our farm last year. And it's a thriving business that supports not only my family, but other families as well.
Wow. That's a lot of movement forward in just a few years of time. Talk about how busy is your event venue?
Well, it is a everything but weddings venue is what we call it. And that's intentional, because my goal is from May to November, I want to do flowers for 3 to 5 weddings every single weekend, which means I need to get along really well with all the other event venues in central Minnesota, because I want to do flowers there. And also the way our flowers, it's a crop. It's not a garden. It's not a park. It looks pretty at times, but sometimes, I mean, it's a working farm. It's not large scale gardening. It's small scale farming is how I describe it. And so I do think that being able to host things like showers and graduation parties and rehearsal dinners and retirement parties, it was very much needed in our area. And for the months of March, April, and now into May, we have at least 3 events every weekend, and we're starting to get booked up for events during the week, during the evening. And then we're starting to host a lot of corporate retreats during the day. And so by law, maximum capacity, we can fit up to 160 people in our event venue based on fire code. But I think we cut it off at about 100. We don't want more than 100 people here at a time. And then, you know, but the way it's designed, it's perfectly fine for a group of 15, and it's perfectly fine for a group of 75.
It's amazing to hear your story, because as you said, really wondered about, gosh, you were really in a situation where you probably couldn't sell. It's not like just selling a house or a property. There's only so many people that want a farm that is that big, et cetera. Yet you've achieved a lot of success now. So how are you doing mentally?
How am I doing mentally? Good question. honestly, it's a day by day thing that you keep working forward, and you know, it's a choice. But I can say that I am happily remarried. I have in many ways built the career and the dream life that I never planned on. But I will say there's always a tiny bit of me that thinks it's not supposed to be that way. And that's okay, because I feel like everyone has a little bit of that. Life is not always going to go as planned, but our daughters are very healthy and very happy, and I know he would be very proud. And I've been able to build this very happy life. The motto of our farm is, well, I'm not sure if I can say the D word, but it's happy, happy D.
All right, Dr. Liz Fiedler-Mergen back in a moment on Inside Douglas County. The interview via podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1245 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1247, Lars Larson coming up at 1. We've got a variety of programs ahead this week on Inside Douglas County. This is certainly one of the more unusual ones. Flowers bloom anyway. Dr. Liz Fiedler-Mergen telling her story this afternoon. And your book is coming out really soon, right?
Yeah, it comes out in March. So pre-orders are open now, and it is doing very well. We'll put it that way.
And how do people get connected to do a pre-order?
So the best way to do it is through Barnes & Noble. And the reason for that is, yes, it's a chain, but it is a company that values in-person shopping, and they support a lot of other independent bookstores. They play nicely with them and with the libraries. And so as an author, one of the best ways to get your book in front of other people is by that pre-order demand, because that shows those other bookstores that people are interested in this.
So you've got that coming up. Now, where did you fit in the idea of writing a book? And I mean, it's been hard enough, I imagine, to live the last 5 years of your life in many ways, but yet to retell it, it must mean that you'd like to help others get through their tough times.
That's exactly it. I feel like the things that resonated with me and helped me were the things that made me feel validated in my feelings, that, hey, this is quote unquote normal, or I'm not the only person that feels this way, this guilt or whatever it might be. And it started out as just kind of journaling. And I'll be honest, the first version of the book was about 6 months in, and it was probably 100 pages long. And I was going to title it Things Not to Say When Someone's Husband Dies. And I'll tell you what, if that book ever gets published, I will be in trouble, because it's pretty angry and I don't want that to be published. And the thing is, as time goes, and I feel like I was valid in how I was feeling, but you learn with time that people are trying to say the right thing. They just don't know what to say. And when you focus on intention, you know, but at the same time, people can learn how to better support someone that's grieving, or how to better, you know, one example that I give is my husband was 39 years old when he died. And forever and ever, I have to listen to people make jokes about turning 40, because 40 is over the hill. And as I'm in my late 30s now, I have to hear people complain about turning 40 and their 40th birthday. And that's really hard for me, because he never got to turn 40. But at the same time, I realized they're not trying to hurt me. And so originally it was going to be a self-help book, and I was trying to find a way to get it into, you know, how to help people that are grieving. And I was trying not to talk too much about my farm and the story. And really that is what helped me heal, having this purpose, having this connection to him, to honor him, to build something for our daughters. And so while it's still in the categories of self-help and religion, because I am a Christian, so there's some raw and honest feelings in there as well, but it's really more in the memoir category and the story of how this farm came to be at the same time. So I think that there's a little bit of everything. You don't have to be grieving the loss of a life in order to get something out of this, because as I share, especially when you're widowed young, there's a lot of secondary losses that happened, just that you can be grieving anyone who's rebuilding a life that didn't go as planned.
And on the other side of this, right before the break, you mentioned you're now remarried.
I am now remarried. I am, and he is wonderful.
What was that process like to even think about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, on the one hand, there's always that scary part of falling in love again and risking something happening again or feeling that heartbreak again. But there's also some judgment that comes with it, and people have ideas or thoughts whether or not you should get remarried, or whether or not it's too fast or too slow, or, you know, comparisons. And I'm very fortunate to have a husband that understands all of it, and he hasn't, I gave him many opportunities to run, I'll tell you that much. In the very beginning, I viewed it as, in some ways, you know, Father's Day, if we have more children together, and we haven't at this point yet, and I don't know if we will, but he's dad to my daughters, and they know about Josh, and we talk about him every single day. But, you know, Father's Day, Christmases, holidays, they're going to include a trip to the cemetery. And are you okay with that? And you can't be jealous, and you can't, you know, and just those feelings that we've been able to really talk about well. And I've been so blessed to have someone that totally understands it and views my daughters as a bonus and is very respectful toward the love that I have, not had, but toward my late husband.
So are you still a nurse practitioner as well?
I still work one day a week as a nurse practitioner. I do video visits from home, keeping that license up. I've just gradually cut back as my farm has grown, and I do more speaking, and I started the Rooted Agritourism podcast, which is a lot of flower farms and specialty farms and a lot of details about opinions on, you know, land zoning and what counts as agriculture and things like that I never really expected my life to turn into, but here we are.
You know, the agritourism piece, of course, here in rural southern Oregon, a lot of agriculture going on, a lot of wine production going on, a lot of other crops as well. And so that's something that comes up around here periodically as well. I got the opportunity back in late September, early October, while we were a group of us here from Roseburg, where over in Tuscany, one of our stops was at an agritourism site where we had dinner. It was a working winery, a big mm-hmm. place, but they served us dinner. We were just there for the evening and then went back into where we were staying, about an hour away. But folks could stay there for, you know, a week or two or whatever. And a pretty fascinating aspect to even the concept of being a visitor for a short term on a farm like that. I'm sure there's a lot of interesting things you have to say about some of the agritourism things.
Yeah, I definitely, you know, it's a new hot topic. What is considered farming? What is, you know, and the USDA has a definition of it. And ultimately, it's a way for families to stay viable. I mean, we bought 40 acres. It was zoned agriculture, and it used to be, you know, I don't know, 30 years ago, especially in the area that we live, we're only a few miles from an area that's about 200,000 people, St. Cloud, Minnesota, and all of the suburbs. And so we're pretty close. There's a lot of housing developments near us. And, you know, the rent that I get for my 25 acres of corn does not even cover the property taxes anymore. It maybe used to, but it definitely doesn't now. And so if you want to keep these parcels of land for families and you want them to have a certain amount because of agriculture, you have to get a little creative on, you know, what counts as a crop and how people are able to make money off of that land.
Wow. So how long did it take you to, once you got past your sort of first try at a book, to get this book out?
So this has been 5 years in the making, and it really, I would say it ends about summer of 2025. There's really not much in there past this past summer, but it's about a 5 year journey. And it, about a year and a half, a year ago, I guess, I met my publisher and they wanted to tell the story and really took the notes that I had. And I had a wonderful editor that worked with me, but it was a lot of words on paper that we had to condense and move around, and really trying to figure out how to teach people how they get lessons out of what I'm telling. Because while, yes, it's, I don't want to use the word entertaining, but yeah, I guess it's entertaining. You know, it's an interesting story and it reads well, but I also want people to get something out of this that they can take and relate and maybe understand how I was feeling in those moments. Things like, you know, every year, December 9th is the anniversary of his death. And, you know, people think that I'm sad on that day because I'm missing him. And sometimes it's It's like, no, I'm just reliving that day. And it was a really hard day. It was traumatic. I'm reminded of it all, or just that anticipatory grief or the secondary losses, and just help people understand a little bit more.
Now, going through all of this, getting the book out, did you have interest in writing before, outside of just, you know, writing medical reports and things like that?
No, I'll be honest. It definitely was a different skill that I had to learn. I have my doctorate in nursing, and so I've written a dissertation. I've written tons of papers, but it's all, you know, very APA style citations, very fact-based. You know, when you're charting on a patient, it's, you don't put in a lot of filler words because you can't make assumptions out of things, or how someone is feeling, or how it appears, you know. So it was very different. So I never planned on being a writer, but I'll tell you, I've always been pretty chatty. So the podcast makes sense. And once I started telling my story, it's become pretty natural. And I've done a lot of speaking across the country, not just to, you know, women in business groups or grief or entrepreneurial, but also a lot of financial and insurance places that they just kind of need people to tell these stories that, yes, it can happen and you can die young, and, you know, just the story. So there's a lot of different topics that I speak on. And so that was kind of an extension of the book as well.
Well, obviously, you stay pretty busy.
I do. I stay very busy, but you should see my calendar. I have like 10 different colors and it's color coded, and I try not to work more than 40 hours a week, but that doesn't usually happen, but I try.
So if people want to, again, as we wrap up, if people want to pre-order the book, where do they go?
Barnes & Noble, type in Flowers Bloom Anyway. You can find my website, multiple, for my flower farm, the podcast, everything at LizFiddlerMergen.com. That'll have links to my social media. That'll have links to everything. It'll also have a link to the book on there, but LizFiddlerMergen.com, or you can just type in Flowers Bloom Anyway, and I bet it'll show up when you Google it.
Well, Liz, we've appreciated talking with you. Fascinating, tough story. Thanks for being on this afternoon.
Thank you so much for having me.
1259 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.